This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:15 in the evening and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. And our next story is about Singapore's goal to phase out petrol and diesel vehicles. So they want to do this by 2040, and this was announced during the country's budget speech. The plan is to phase out internal combustion engine vehicles and have all vehicles in Singapore run on cleaner energy.
So they have several initiatives to help this effort. This includes an early adoption incentive scheme for EV buyers or electric vehicle buyers from 2021 to 2023. Rebates will be capped at 20,000 Singapore dollars per vehicle. Road tax for EVs and some hybrids will be revised to be less punitive. They'll also increase the number of EV charging infrastructure.
So I mean, I was really struck by this because it's such a clear goal, and it's very absolute. It is 2040, really nice round number, easy to remember. And then it's phase out petrol and diesel vehicles. So that's all, you know, it's a very absolute goal. It's not like we shall aim to get to, 75%. It's not that. So that just had me thinking how long there is to go on that, you know. It is a 20-year goal. So what are the steps that need to be taken in order to get there? Whether or not there will be the usual ideas of resistance around adoption that happen whenever we talk here, whether or not people can afford to do that, or really whether there will just be fewer vehicles because they, of course, have a good public transport infrastructure. So I suppose this will go hand in hand with that, right? It's like you'll be able to get to more places anyway because we already have that on hand. But for people who continue to drive, then this is what's going to happen.
I like that the reasoning that the finance minister gave, which was that it is both for public health and climate change reasons. So it does come off as quite an existential one because they did mention that because we are a low-lying island, Singapore is especially vulnerable to the grave threat of rising sea level. So it is, you know, part and parcel of the other initiatives that they've introduced, including investments into coastal defences against rising sea levels. And it is, to me, separately quite interesting that they're looking to focus on EVs because I think EVs don't look like quite a sexy idea, especially if you happen to be someone who can afford a car. Having a car in Singapore is a luxury. The taxes are insane, right? The focus on EVs is one thing, but I'm hoping there's also other initiatives to focus on things that are less sexy. That means putting a lot more investment back into making their public transportation, which is already great, even better and even more accessible.
So, like I said, I think basically what's happening here is it's nice, essentially, to see a country take climate change seriously, you know, to actually say, look, we recognize that this is a grave and direct threat to our existence, being an island city nation, and we're going to do the things that we think we need to do in order to get that going. Now, how that's going to be received by people is another thing. How they're going to get there, also something that needs to be considered. So to talk us through all this is Dr. Timothy Wong, who is a lecturer at the Department of Economics at the National University of Singapore. Timothy, thank you so much for joining us. To start off, let's talk about that timeline. Does 2040 look reasonable for you in order to phase out petrol and diesel vehicles?
20 years is a long time and a lot can happen in 20 years. So I don't think the government, by bringing up the year 2040 here, is really looking at achieving any particular hard set aim. I think the purpose of mentioning the year 2040 is to give the population a sense of how long they are committed to this goal. But technologies can change very drastically over 20 years. The available energy sources that there are for transportation can change very drastically over 20 years. And so I think really what the government is saying is that for the next 20 years, we are committed to nudging our energy sources towards cleaner energy. But what we will actually achieve at the end of 2040, I think, it really depends on all these other factors as well.
What is the government planning to do to encourage the adoption of electric vehicles?
In the very short term, as you've seen from the announcement in the 2020 budget, the goal is to provide financial incentives that would lower the upfront cost of electric vehicles so that they become more enticing to customers. And it's a sizable decrease because they have agreed to reduce the additional registration fees by up to 20,000 Singapore dollars, which is a significant proportion of the cost of the car. Currently, the available electric cars in Singapore's market are priced at a premium relative to petrol cars. So this is going to make some of the lower-end cars a little more price competitive. The other maybe more important policy that they have alluded to but not given very much specifics on is the increase in the number of charging stations. The reality is that the majority of Singaporeans don't live in landed private property. Right? They live in either private condominiums or the vast majority in HDB flats, which means they park their cars in parking garages. They don't have a private spot for their car, right? So unless and until these parking garages have charging points, electric cars are going to be very unattractive to these Singaporeans at any price point, because I'm not going to buy a car if I don't have a place to charge it overnight. But I think in the much longer run, the goal is to correctly price carbon, which means to place a carbon tax on all the different types of energy sources, such that consumers make decisions that bear in mind the price that carbon and other pollutants will have on their transportation decisions. So currently, it looks like the government is using financial incentives. I think in the longer run, you'll be looking at financial costs.
Right. And, you know, as we've known for years, Singapore has been actively discouraging personal car ownership in order to prevent congestion. How does the government view electric vehicle ownership in this regard?
Yeah, so electric cars, like, we like them because they're cleaner than petrol and diesel cars. But in terms of congestion, they're no different, right? And so electric cars in Singapore are still going to be subject to the vehicle quota system, which means you'll need a certificate of entitlement to get one of these cars, which is one of the measures that the government uses to make sure that the roads are not too congested. They'll still be subjected to congestion pricing, so they will pay ERP fees the same way that petrol and diesel cars are charged. But the one thing that the government already recognizes here is a problem is the other way that the Singapore government discourages driving is through petrol taxes. But petrol taxes are not going to affect electric cars because they don't use petrol. So in that sense, as when the government encourages electric cars, they won't be able to limit as well the extent that electric cars will create congestion. So until the government launches its new ERP system that's based on GPS tracking within the vehicle, it's certainly going to have less control over congestion brought about by these electric cars, which you could imagine be one of the reasons why the government will not be incredibly aggressive with promoting electric cars until they have this new congestion pricing system in place.
What impact will this move have on businesses, for example, when it comes to transportation of goods or delivery of services?
To be honest, I don't expect any change at all. The reason being the number of electric cars in Singapore currently is 0.2% of the vehicle population. So in the immediate term, we will see an increase from 0.2% to not very much more. So it'll have very little effect on taxi services. The other thing that was announced today was that there will be some preferential treatment for electric vehicles when it comes to light commercial vehicles as well. But those incentives have not yet been announced. So until we hear about those, which I think will come out in the coming weeks, the current policies that have been announced, I think, will have very little impact on costs of transportation of goods and delivery services.
What kind of reactions might we see when it comes to this initiative?
To be honest, I don't expect a large reaction to this. The reason being this electric vehicle type policy is going to affect people who own cars or intend to own cars, and that's a smaller proportion of the population since the majority of Singaporeans take public transport. And it's also going to be only affect people that have access to charging stations, and that's mostly people who live in landed houses, which is, again, a small proportion of the population. Although there is one thing that I will say that Singaporeans might be happy about is at least the government's announcement that it intends to support cleaner energy in the private vehicle market for the next 20 years is encouraging in the fact that we will see cars with lower local pollutants and quieter cars as well. So Singapore is a dense place, which means most homes are not too far from a main road, right? And so the most households are exposed to the dirty air coming from the tailpipe emissions from vehicles. And so if you have an electric vehicle, then the air quality is going to be cleaner. And at the same time, these cars are much quieter than typical petrol cars.
Would it be a better approach to focus more on accessible public transport so that personal vehicles can eventually be phased out?
At least through 2030, there will be a significant expansion of the MRT system in terms of lines. The other solution is, as much as we would like everybody to move to underground trains, that's not going to be entirely feasible. So if we could expand the fleet of electric buses, that might make a big difference as well, right? Because many people on the roads in Singapore are using buses, not private vehicles. So switching our bus fleet to an electrified fleet instead might be a more impactful policy to the general Singaporean.
Timothy, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Timothy Wong, lecturer at the Department of Economics at the National University of Singapore. If you would like to weigh in, I mean, do you think that this is something that we could ever potentially do here? You know, set a goal like by 2050 or by 2060, we would also phase out, petrol and diesel engines in lieu of electric vehicle cars. Let us know. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Just a couple of last messages, both on salary and power transitions. And firstly, we have an anonymous thought saying, just my opinion about Datuk Sri Anwar's popularity with certain segments of the Malay electorate. Could it be his accent? Even when he's speaking Bahasa Malaysia, he doesn't sound that Malay. And I think this is a pretty interesting conflation of both our topics today, right? Like specifically the idea of the power transition, but also how your accent can determine how you're viewed.
Yeah, though I've always found it interesting that for Dr. Sri Anwar Ibrahim, that his accent in English and Bahasa is very different. He, for some reason, is able to very well code switch properly. Mm.
Yeah, that's true. He does that well. And so I think the investigation as to what exactly it is will continue. Perhaps
our political analysts can't seem to figure it out either.
Correct. But once they do, I hope they'll come back on and tell us, because I really am curious. Kaylin says, didn't realize I was so underpaid until I found out how much my subordinate was getting. Glad I swapped companies recently as I got a good pay raise. I was way overworked in my previous company and not appreciated. Clocked in 30 hours straight once for a big campaign and not a single thank you from my boss or client.
Yeah, I think in the short term, maybe it seems more effective to not pay your staff as well, because the long-term investment of having loyal, really talented, really smart, dedicated staff only pays off much longer. So that is not obvious, right? You can always get another person to replace that role immediately.
Yes. And in conclusion, Balan says, the last salary increment I received was when most of my expert team members left. So there you go. All right, guys, we're going to be headed off to the 7:30 news and then back for Popcorn Culture. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.